Hi, I'm Brian Ward, DVD producer from Shout Factory, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Welcome to All Things Transformers. I am Mike Blanchard, and joining me today is Kevin Optimus Solo Thompson. Hello.
Hello, sir.
And Stephen C. Phillips. How are you, sir?
Good.
So today we have another interview for the listeners. Steve, who are we talking to this time?
Today we are talking with Brian Ward. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Doing well, guys.
Excellent.
Very, very cool. Very excited to talk to you.
And, yes.
And pick your brain about Shout Factory.
Oh, well, I've got things to say about Shout Factory. Oh, wait.
All right. So, starting off, you spent most of your youth in North Carolina. How would you describe yourself as a kid? What were your favorite TV shows and cartoons growing up?
Wow. I was a complete television addict. Still am. TV, DVD, Blu-ray, those are my vices. I grew up the son of a military man, so I found over the course of my life that you've got two types of military brats. You've got the kinds who make friends everywhere they go, and then the kinds that don't really make friends anywhere, because what's the point? You're just moving in a couple of years. That was me. And I'm not saying that to be, sad or anything, but it turned out I just really, really enjoyed alone time, and in doing that I got to fall in love with the television, came home every single day. My all-time favorite was Transformers G1. G.I. Joe was probably a quick second, along with Voltron. Thundercats was a staple in the house. It's funny, I always go back to the Sunbow series were always my go-to for as long as I could get them. And then when they sort of went away, things started to sort of decline for me. But I made a comment to some guys, to Joe Bacall and Tom Griffin, actually, when I was doing the original Matrix set and Foot Locker sets for Transformers and G.I. Joe, that I didn't really get into playing sports. Like football. I played football throughout all of high school and my freshman year of college before I got hurt. And I didn't get into sports or any kind of after-school activities until I realized they weren't making any more episodes of Transformers. And once I caught on to that, I was like, I might as well just stay after school, do a little something.
Excellent.
All right, so obviously you're a Transformers fan from a kid to now.
Yeah.
Did you collect any of the toys, or are you collecting any of the Transformers stuff nowadays?
I have an original Optimus Prime sitting in my office as we speak. It's mine from a kid, so it's very well played with. He has no arms.
Oh, poor Optimus.
I know, but he fought hard and valiantly, and he still won the battle.
As he always does.
I'm not really collecting anything now. Usually, I kind of go after the more vintage stuff, the stuff that I grew up on. I'm very much a product of nostalgia, which I guess is good since I work here at Shout. I'm finding a lot of the stuff that comes out today is really cool, but I'm not sure what I would do with it outside of display it. And I've got a collector mentality, but I also have the, for the love of all that's holy, I want to rip into it and play with it mentality, which I don't think works very well with the stuff they're coming out with today.
Right. Your IMDb bio states that you were a child actor, but it doesn't list any of the shows or credits for you.
There's a good reason for that. I did stuff, you know, there were commercials here and there, and there were shows and guest appearances on shows.
So if we went to YouTube right now and searched Brian Ward commercial, an old 80s commercial would show up?
I'm not sure you would find it. There was a Frost of Flakes ad that I did.
Did you have a favorite appearance that you made?
Not really. I just enjoyed it. I've enjoyed just kind of being social and being an actor in any way that I could. When I moved out to LA, it certainly wasn't to act, but it's definitely a first love. It's something that I would like to do more of, but not necessarily as a career.
Gosh. I just had an awesome thought. What if he is the kid from the Transformers commercials?
He would have told us that.
I'm the one that's blurred out. sadly, I didn't get a chance to do the Transformers stuff. That would have been killer.
Yeah, it would have been.
So how did you get into DVD production?
It was actually an accident. I went to school for television production and came out to Los Angeles sort of on a whim, and found myself very quickly having to fall back on the old my old job in retail, which before I moved out to the West Coast, I was managing a Suncoast video, and did that for a couple of years after school. When I found out only afterward that communications is the most saturated degree you could possibly get, found myself managing an FYE out here, and selling DVDs and CDs to everyone, and that put me in touch with an acquaintance who informed me that they had a position as a marketing assistant at Shout Factory, and I came in, literally worked my way up from the ground floor. I was here 3 days a week, part time, stuffing envelopes that CDs and DVDs that went out to radio stations and things like that for like giveaways or review copies and things like that, and made it very clear very early on that I knew DVDs. And within a year, I was in the DVD department, and within 6 months of that, I was producing my first title.
Nice.
Wow.
Without because saying anything
Cops.
That will get you... What's that?
Cops, the Animated Series is my first title, yeah.
Excellent.
Oh, one of Kevin's favorites.
I own that one. What things do you like most and least about your job?
I don't think there's anything that it's funny, I was having this conversation with someone not too long ago, and I don't really think there's anything I don't like about the job. Well, that's not true. The one thing that I would say that I have to complain about is the fact that these projects have to end sometime. I've come across so many different projects that I've enjoyed working on so much. The Middleman is still to this day one of my all-time favorites. The Matrix Leadership Edition on Transformers, the Foot Locker on G.I. Joe, Dark Skies last year, Max Headroom last year. I mean, these are all titles that I grew up with and absolutely loved any opportunity I could get to put these things into a DVD player or to produce bonus material for them. And eventually it comes to harsh realization that it's got to end.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is sort of the part that I have trouble with, is letting go, realizing that at some point in time it's got to go to the plant. But at the same time, the best part of the job is seeing it when it's done. I love putting together the interviews and putting together any kind of archival bonus features I can get my hands on. And I'm just very much into the collection as a whole. And I think that's the beauty of Shout, is we all get a say, and we all seem to get it. We all very much come from that kind of collector mentality. So it's not five or six departments all working without knowing what each other is doing. They're all trying to interact. Our Dark Skies DVD set, you know, from the packaging to the menus to the bonus features, it's all one cohesive thing. Like you feel like the entire thing is kind of an experience. And that couldn't have been done if the art department wasn't involved and the marketing department wasn't involved and, you know, with our stuff. So I came across the right company for sure.
Which fandoms have been the most helpful or the most annoying for you as you try to collect bonus materials for? What DVD set did you get the most feedback or help in gathering content for production?
Well, you know what? The Matrix of Leadership Edition, for sure, had a great deal of fan interaction. One thing that I'm really happy about, if I was working for any of the studios, I wouldn't be able to go to the fans. These guys very much are part of what makes our DVD sets worth watching. Very early on, as soon as we announce the deal, I'm usually either on Twitter or I'm on shoutfactory.com. We've got a community forum there where I'm there every day, just about, or at least I try to be. And I can be very straightforward and tell people exactly what I'm doing, what I'm working on, sort of giving them as much of a look behind the curtain as I'm allowed to. Sometimes I might give them a little too much, but it allows everyone to get an opportunity to see exactly what's going on. And if for some reason something that they really wanted to be on a box set wasn't there, usually they'll find out that I tried, or they'll see it right there that I tried and for whatever reason it couldn't be there. So it's not that we didn't put the effort in or we didn't know. It's because you know, it wasn't available to us or whatever. So the fans are very much involved. The Transformers collection was definitely one that they donated a lot. All the commercials you see there are all from fans. Hasbro didn't have any commercials, old archival commercials available to us. And they were kind enough to allow us to use them when we got them from fans. A lot of the artwork and things like that came from fans. G.I. Joe was the same way, and right now I'm finding that I'm almost having to kick people away when it comes to Gem and the Holograms. There are so many people who have collected so much material. In fact, I just gave Hasbro some old archival stuff that they no longer still had, but that a fan had a pristine copy of.
Nice.
And you know, I'd scanned it at really high resolution, and I just handed them the disc the other day. So they're very grateful for their fans.
Who is the coolest person that you've gotten to meet through your job?
The coolest person. You know what? I actually got a chance to meet a couple of my heroes. I've met a few of my heroes. I mean, being able to interview Ernest Borgnine and Tim Conway for Mikhail's Navy was pretty special. But I would say that probably, interviewing Frank Welker for Transformers and, I would say that really the two people that stick out the most are Aaron Sorkin and Tommy Shalhoub on Sports Night. Getting an opportunity to meet those guys. Sorkin's been my all-time favorite television writer since Sports Night and West Wing. And Shalhoub has been my all-time favorite director. So to have them both in a room and to be able to be a part of that was really a dream come true.
Very cool. Switching into the process of producing a DVD set, what stages? Can you kind of walk us through Shout Factory's process of, like, when you guys first get, you know, like, you have this deal with Hasbro, like, what's the process of selecting the next big thing, and how do you guys go about from beginning to end putting that together?
Well, it's interesting, because a lot of times what we want to do the first time is sort of get our foot in the door. You obviously don't want to go to a licensor and make a lot of demands. You sort of go for what you think will be good, popular sellers. But you don't go in with, you know, a list of 20 titles. You go in with a list of a handful, because it's just a lot easier to clear those sorts of rights. If it's something that's going to take a lot of work, then a lot of times, you know, those deals aren't going to happen. And then luckily, because we're Shout and because we've got a pretty good name, sometimes the licensors come to us. And so we've got a pretty fortunate gig there. Once we make the deal, and what a lot of people don't realize is this sort of thing can take years. You know, it can literally take, we just literally closed the Nickelodeon deal and started releasing Nickelodeon stuff. And, you know, the name Nickelodeon has been going around Shout Factory's hall since I started working here. It's sort of a coup to get in with Paramount and Nick and all the studios. We feel really lucky, that they all seem to like us. So, but once we get the title, we then orchestrate delivery of materials like, masters. We go through a QC process to make sure each master is the best one that we can find. If there's something wrong with it, we'll send it back and request another. If it's something that requires tricky little edits or anything like that, we'll go and do that. Occasionally we'll restore or remaster something depending on what it is. A lot of our Roger Corman titles are brand new high def, remasters and look gorgeous. And occasionally we've done that with television. I just did a 37 disc box set of Leave It to Beaver where the last, all six seasons were from brand new high def transfers. And, the first and foremost is making sure that the television is that the show itself is the best quality you can possibly get. After that, I immediately watch every episode. I want to be as informed as I possibly can. I go looking for archival material, and if there's something that I want and it doesn't exist, I go trying to find as much as I possibly can when it comes to creating new bonus material, which is probably my favorite part of the production process. I coordinate with my DVD authoring houses what we think the menus should look like. We like to make it an experience. So I try to make the menus as consistent with the packaging or as consistent with whatever I can get. I want you to put the disc in and think that you're seeing something that's all cohesive. So we sort of coordinate all of that with the art department. The art department works on the art. We approve that. Then we approve the menus and finally QC the DVD when it's all done. And the licensor gets a say in all of it. Luckily I've not had too many problems with licensors just not liking something. The beauty of the studios we work with is they all seem to get it, which is good.
And I know there's probably some fans out there that get frustrated when a certain show gets like a first season release and never gets its second season, or maybe gets a couple seasons but doesn't get that last season. Is that all strictly right. just on sales?
It is. I mean, one thing that fans have to realize is they paid maybe $30, $40 or something for a collection on DVD. Shout Factory paid a whole lot more than that. so it's not really a matter of, you know, we got a five-season a TV series and then just decided not to put out seasons two through five. It would be a huge problem for us to spend the amount of money that it takes to license a TV show, to market the TV show, and then the production costs alone are astronomical. And so it really does, you know, we love what we put out on DVD and Blu-ray. But it is, at the end of the day, a business. And if we're not selling enough, if the audience doesn't appear to be there, we literally can't afford to stay in business if we just keep producing them. What a lot of people don't understand is there's a natural drop-off in sales of each volume. So if one volume sells 30,000, the second volume isn't guaranteed to sell 30,000. It's going to sell a little bit less, and then mm-hmm. it's going to sell a bit less in season three and a little bit less in season four, and it really becomes a numbers game. If by the time we get to season three, we're not selling enough, or we don't think we're going to sell enough, it becomes a question of, well, is this something that goes to Shout Factory Select, which we can sell fewer of and still make some money? Or is it something we have to kind of say, maybe the fan base we thought was there isn't? Or right. they're just not, in this economy, they may not be ready to buy yet. So.
You mentioned Nickelodeon, and I just want to bring something up, because on another one of our podcasts, we had a lengthy discussion recently that none of the game shows from Nickelodeon are available on DVD.
Right.
Is there any chance that there would ever be like a best of Nickelodeon game shows if you guys couldn't do like the individual shows themselves?
I don't know. I mean, it's something that's come up on our forums a number of times. My personal thought is I don't know how. I find myself looking back at things like Double Dare mm-hmm. and thinking, what a great show, but not sure if it's something that I have to have on my shelf.
Right.
Now I realize that I'm not the Double Dare owner. And I wonder how many Double Dare owners there are out there. So I think it's definitely a risk, because you're still talking about a game show. Mm-hmm. But you've got certain game shows that have come out there, that have come out, and they've sold fairly well. So, you know, particularly a lot of the classic game shows, from the 60s and 70s have sold really well on DVD. So who knows? I think it's certainly worth a shot. I would love to, get Mark Summers into a room and ask him questions about, Green Slime and Obstacle Course.
Well, yeah, like you said, I don't know if I'd want a whole one on Double Dare, but I think it'd be cool as heck if there was a DVD that had like a couple episodes of Double Dare, a couple episodes of Guts and Legends of the Hidden Temple. And
yeah, you know. Like it could very easily be something that we do, similar to our Mary sitcom or our Haya Kids, collections, where it's a single episode of each one, and maybe you do mm-hmm. a two or three disc set of just your favorite game shows from 80s and 90s Nickelodeon or something along those lines. I think it'd be great.
I'd be all over it.
So would I.
What was the hardest DVD collection that you've had to work on since being at Shout Factory? Like, what DVD collection, like getting it together, what was the one that gave you the most issues?
Well, I guess it would just depend on what the issues were. We've had issues that have involved masters where it's been like you really don't want to use what the studio has or what still exists, and you find yourself kind of looking at it going, oh, I don't know. But I wouldn't say that anything has necessarily given me a lot of trouble, per se. I mean, I've had various degrees of problems, but I wouldn't say that anything has been everything's kind of been overcome And in some cases has been made better. For instance, when it came to Max Headroom, which was a set I absolutely loved working on, we weren't legally allowed to use clips in our bonus features, clips from the show. I mean, certain contracts for when the TV show were created didn't allow that sort of thing later. And unfortunately, because of the era it was created, no one understood that this would eventually become something that people wanted to see and own on home video. And therefore, we couldn't use clips, but we had roughly 90 minutes worth of interview material, you know, or featurettes. And they actually turned out really, really well. And, you know, kind of earned us an award this year at the TV Shows and DVD Awards. But so, yeah, we kind of overcame our problems, and it sort of worked out for the best. I wouldn't say that anything has been a horrible, horrible problem or anything. Occasionally you run in that TV show that has, like, syndicated masters or something like that, and you just can't find original broadcasts. And unfortunately, you have to make do with it. But for the most part, everything's exactly the way we'd want it.
Cool. And switching gears, we're going to be jumping into the Beast Wars questions.
That one is the one that's giving me the hardest time.
I can honestly see some of that.
Yeah.
I've seen some of the posts. What was that?
No. Go ahead.
All right. What did you try to do differently on this version of the Beast Wars DVDs than Rhino did in theirs?
Everything. No, not even really. I mean, I respect all the things that Rhino did in the heyday of DVD. I think that if I do anything that's specifically different from Rhino, it's the bonus material. Rhino used to include a lot of 6 to 8 to 10 minute interviews with, say, a writer, and it would be an edit that was a simple edit between two shots, a medium close-up and a close-up that was very similar to the medium close-up. No cutaways, nothing to illustrate points, nothing to and I don't really, you know, it doesn't really matter who you are, if you're watching just what seems like raw footage, it doesn't take long to suddenly start to glaze over it. So I think I try to, you know, with our featurettes and our bonus material, we try to make them a bit more exciting for people to watch. But I wouldn't say that we necessarily, the beauty of these particular shows were that they were computer animated, and they didn't have the same sort of mistakes that, say, the G1 series had with Transformers, or that Gem had when Rhino released them. So there was nothing that we had to really go in and correct, per se.
I did
matches
notice
were all in pretty good shape.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I did notice when I looked at the because I have one of the complete series sitting in front of me.
Sure.
I noticed that you guys actually got the episode orders incorrect, whereas Rhino had some of them in the wrong area.
Right. Now, are you saying we got them correct?
Yes they're
you
in
did.
The correct order.
Okay.
Correct.
Oh,
chronologically.
Thank God.
They're correct, right. Chronologically, because we actually did this on our Beast Wars review podcast, and we're like, and this was before the announcement that it was even going to be on DVD. We're like, we hope Shout gets it and corrects it.
Yeah, because on the Rhino DVDs, Rhino has the probe and a better mousetrap reversed.
Oh.
So it doesn't fit chronologically.
Right. Well, I seem to remember there was something along those lines the fans would say on our forum, you know, to make sure that the episode order was correct. And that's something where, granted, Wikipedia probably wasn't, if it wasn't around, or if it was around, which I don't think it necessarily was, but if it was around, it probably wasn't as widely used or as accurate, quote-unquote accurate, as Wikipedia is today. But Yes. But the beauty of it is, you know, now I can go to Wikipedia, I can go to TV Rage, I can go to TV.com, I can go to IMDb, and I can pretty much find a definitive answer to what order TV shows should be in. When you're ever in doubt, go to the fans and ask them, because they know. Mm-hmm. So I always sort of cross-reference all these things, and I make sure that everything fits. Because I grew up with G1. I didn't grow up with Beast Wars. By the time Beast Wars came out, I was already, like I said, I was already, you know, doing after-school activities and things like that. And to be perfectly honest, I was a little creeped out by a computer-generated animated series. I started producing this box set right after I finished up Reboot, which was also done by Mainframe. And I thought Reboot was fantastic and suddenly got really excited about the prospect of a Transformers series done by these guys. And then as I started watching Beast Wars, I got it. It made sense to me. The depth of character and just the darkness of the tone is, this is, you know, it's not necessarily your little kid's Beast Wars or, you know, Transformers, but at the same time, it's very family friendly. So the show was pretty fantastic, but I would never want to see it out of chronological order. Unlike G1 or some of the G.I. Joe series, which were pretty much just 23-minute standalone TV series, this one had a story arc, and that's something that's pretty important. So,
I noticed with the booklet, too, it's also a lot nicer where it's not glued to the case like Rhino's was.
Right. Like I said, we basically see everything from the perspective of a collector. Even if we're not fans of a particular show, we know that there are fans out there, and we all have the eyes of collectors. So we know exactly what it is they would want to see as collectors. And to me, there are certain things that are absolutely no-brainers. Making your packaging less than difficult is a must. If you've got things like booklets, you don't want to necessarily have to pull out a slipcase in order to or another digipack or something in order to read the booklet. It should be separate. So really, it just becomes kind of less is more. I get the impression that a lot of times early DVD companies would sort of adopt this rule of let's make the packaging as cool and as complicated as possible because it'll be awesome. Really, it just becomes troublesome and kind of annoying. And so, I think now we've sort of gotten into this method of let's give them a book. Let's give them a comic book, which we did for Beast Wars, let's make their collections easy.
The Shout website lists new interviews as a part of the Beast Wars collection. Is there any way you can tell our listeners who those interviews are with?
New interviews with? Yeah, we interviewed Christopher Broff. Who is the producer, who has a lot of really, really great things to say about the series. Let's see, we used a couple of archival interviews with Bob Forward and Larry Tilio. I'm trying to remember now who this was forever ago. I'm trying to remember. We also talked to folks at Hasbro, Aaron Archer, and a couple of guys there who were heavily involved with the toys. This was a really interesting experiment for Hasbro to take a previously established franchise and toy line and then completely reinvent it. And it was a big gamble. It was, you know, can we be as successful by taking these toys and doing something completely different with them? And can we make the TV show as successful as the G1 series by doing something completely different with it? And so we talked to some of the guys that were at Hasbro at the time. Talking to them is absolutely fantastic because they've got a complete, just a complete wealth of knowledge that that's absolutely fascinating. I mean, they can remember specifics about toys and deciding to do this and deciding to do that and why they decided to do that. So 15 years later, you're listening to the stories, and then you're hearing Chris Broff talk about producing the series. It really was quite a thing.
When you go to obtain these interviews for the bonus features, how does that work? Do you send out like a mass request and just see who responds? Do you handpick who you want to talk to?
I handpick. Basically, what I do is I go looking for. I do a great deal of research to find out who actually did the work. There are a lot of times, especially in older television, where due to certain union rules or certain rights or regulations or whatever, certain people were getting credited for things they didn't necessarily do. And what you really want to do is go and do the research. You need to figure out who did what, and then you go and you find those people who were most essential to creating the show. And so that's what we do. If it turns out to be something like, say you want to interview voice cast members, you go looking for the people who are the no-brainers. And you don't necessarily go for the person who wrote one episode of Beast Wars. You go for the person who wrote 15 episodes of Beast Wars. Or you go for the person who directed 22 episodes or whatever, because those guys are the ones who are there day in and day out, and they're good enough to keep coming back. That's not to say that people who wrote one episode of Beast Wars weren't good enough, but they were definitely freelance writers. An amazing episode and was written by one of my favorite writers, Len Wein, who anyone who knows DC or Marvel Comics, this guy created Wolverine. Created Swamp Thing, and he went on and wrote an episode of Beast Wars. You know, so it's pretty fantastic to see this stuff. But yeah, you go and you look for those folks, and you see what you can get them to say.
Now, what is your opinion on like Easter eggs being included on DVDs, and are there going to be any, or are there any on the Beast Wars set?
I'm honestly trying to remember if there are any on the Beast Wars set. And I say that because I have a tendency to put Easter eggs on things. The mere fact that I have to think back to whether or not I did it, I want to say that there are not Easter eggs on this one. But I'm in favor. I'm very much of the look. I'm the guy who won't buy a DVD if there isn't bonus features on it. There are movies that are in my top 10 of all time that I don't own because the studios haven't treated them well yet. So to me, if it's something that doesn't necessarily find its way into a featurette, or if it doesn't necessarily make sense, as a little standalone bonus feature, I hide it, and I offer people to go look for it. I mean, you can take. I don't think Cops necessarily had one, but I know Super Mario Brothers Super Show had Easter eggs. I mean, you know, and if you're planting Easter eggs on the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, you're someone who likes Easter eggs. So, and I do. I think it's fun, and I think it gives someone an opportunity to do something with the DVD to make it a little more interactive than your traditional point and click. In fact, if there's anything that I lament about Blu-rays, it's the fact that it makes Easter eggs a lot harder. When you don't have menus to play with, where are you going to hide stuff?
Right. Didn't think about that.
If there is one thing you could have gotten and added to the Beast Wars DVD sets, what would it be?
There are a couple of things that I really wanted to add, and then for one reason or another, whether it was legal concerns or whatever, there was a fan film that was Theft of the Golden Disc that I had and really wanted to include. And unfortunately, there were reasons why we couldn't. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Well, no, that's not true. There were things that I want more voice cast. You know, they're sadly they just wouldn't agree to it. I don't know. I mean, I just can't. I mean, these guys are all busy, so it's really hard to. It's really hard to pin everyone down, and it's really hard to get them all, together at the same place at the same time, or even be able to afford multiple shoots from different locations to do this or that. It's hard. I really want to hear people talk about their characters, I couldn't get it.
You know, if the BotCon lineup this year was all Beast Wars people, you'd have perfect timing to
right.
do that, but you wouldn't be able to make the time to release the set on the set date that you guys had set for it.
Right. In fact, I think it's the Tuesday after BotCon, I think. BotCon is this coming weekend, I think, and I think Transformers is... I think Beast Wars comes out the following Tuesday or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it always seems to happen that way too, where you're kind of like, oh yes, this would be perfect, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh no.
How did the Beast Wars selection differ from G1, G.I. Joe, Gem, Mask, Rocko's Modern Life, and the Sort?
I'm sorry, repeat that.
How did the Beast Wars selection differ from all the other productions you've worked on, such as Transformers, G.I. Joe, Gem, and Mask? And
when you say selection, in what way?
The Beast Wars, just
in terms of the collection, like how was that particular set different than the others?
Yes.
I wouldn't say that it was really all that different than anything else. It's probably about the same. I mean, the thing about the Nickelodeon stuff so far is we've had very little success actually being able to get bonus material for it. There are fans online that are raving about how, you know, Paramount won't let us, Nickelodeon won't let us, and it's not true. We've just not been able to get any, and for one reason or another. Beast Wars worked out pretty well with the number of discs. There weren't a whole lot of bonus feature or additional bonus materials I could have put on here just due to space. The discs already are kind of are pretty packed. So, but one thing that made it cool was I don't think we've included booklets before, but we've never been able to make a deal where we were including something like the prequel comic book. That we did for Beast Wars. It's a reprint of a comic that was released. I believe, as a BotCon exclusive at one point. And
Dawn of Futures Past.
Yeah, exactly. And so we got the rights to it. And in fact, they were like, "Hey, you want it?" And we're like, "Yes, we do." And Hasbro was cool with it, and so we turned it into a smaller, you know, mini comic, and that was pretty cool for me because I'm a huge comic book geek, so being able to work on a set that gives you the right to have a comic book is always a winner for me. So I would say in that regard, you know, I actually really appreciated the things I could get out of Beast Wars. But I will say that because of the nature of the show and the fact that it was computer generated, there isn't a whole lot out there that's, you know, the commercials aren't as readily available. In fact, I put the call out many times to fans asking for things, and they didn't really have any. And Hasbro sadly didn't have any in their archives. And there isn't anything like art, you know, concept art per se, because again, it was rendered in a computer. Now on the computer, you know, on the DVDs, you get to see the original character models, but it's not quite the same as if you were looking at a rough pencil sketch of of a character and then watched as it evolved to its final incarnation. There's a little bit of that, but it's not quite the same just based on the nature of how the show is produced.
Yeah, I noticed some of that, and a lot of the toy commercials were unfortunately very low resolution, as was the return of Megatron Spark and the Nemesis two-parter that was cut out of it.
Right.
What I haven't seen this done before, but what made you guys do season 2 and 3 in one case?
I want to say it was the, if I remember so correctly, I mean, it's probably the just the number of episodes. I think season 1 was probably, what, the full
26
episodes. Season 2 was, I'm guessing season 3 was shorter.
2 and 3 were 13 episodes apiece, so...
Yeah, so it's just worked out that way. Both created, you know, we both ended up creating, or rather, we ended up creating 2 4-disc sets at 26 episodes each.
Makes sense.
We understand that fans, they want, if they're getting a 4-disc set, they don't necessarily then want to be gouged. So it's like, yeah, we could have given them a 4-disc set of season 1, and then we could have given them a 2-disc set of season 2, and then another 2-disc set of season 3, and charged them more. But like I said, we're very much in tune with fans, and we understand when you're kind of getting gypped. We don't want to make you keep putting money in. And so, and then sadly, you know, the reality is, let's say season 1 didn't sell as well, or let's say season 2 didn't sell as well as season 1, you know, then where's season 3? So we like to minimize that sort of risk to the fans. We like to try to give them, everything as quickly as possible. And we also like to try to keep them uniform. So 2 4-disc sets at the same price, or the complete collection, and, I think it just works out.
Yeah, it does. We just have a few more questions here.
No worries.
You seem to be really in touch with the fans out there through your Twitter account, posting on the Shout message boards, etc. Do you make it a point to stay connected with the fans, and do you enjoy that interaction?
I love the interaction. It's not part of my job description. I was never asked to join the forum, and I was never asked to join Twitter. But it's got a couple of things. I'm a nerd. I'm a geek. And I'm very much a social media type person. And I think that's sort of a great way to market something. But not only market it, it gives you an opportunity to interact with people that are basically making your job easier. I can be happy with a DVD set, but I'm not necessarily, you know, look, I don't mean to bring down the fourth wall, but I get a free copy of it. it's the people who spend their money. I'm not happy with the DVD set unless they come back with unboxing videos and they're excited. Or if they go onto Twitter and they talk about the bonus features, or if they go on, I don't even necessarily hold professional DVD critics in as high regard as I do the people who went and spent their paycheck on it. And I'm the same way when it comes to things that I buy. I work in the DVD industry, and I don't have a single industry hookup. I go to Best Buy, and I go to Target, and I go to Amazon with my paycheck every Tuesday, and I spend money on DVDs and Blu-rays. And if I'm not happy with those, I don't necessarily think that the DVD or Blu-ray producer should be happy with it either. And so I can't know that until I either go to the fans and ask them ahead of time, what would you like to see on this? And how would you like it to be treated? Or I could just sit around and wait, like other studios do, and see what the reaction is afterward. And that's a pretty big risk for me. I mean, I'd rather put my hand on it once and give everybody everything they want. the only way to really do that is to talk to them and to treat them like equals, you know. I mean, because we're all in it together, and if they give me ideas that I never would have had before, that it just made the set better. But at the same time, if there's something that they suggest and I can't get it, I let them know, so that they don't go, "Oh, I can't believe that guy didn't put this on there." you know, "Oh, what an idiot." I could slap my head and be like, "Oh, I totally didn't think of that." Or I could say, "You know, look, guys, yesterday we were turned down on this. Unfortunately, we can't do it. Here's why." And then they go, "Oh, okay, that makes sense."
Right. So for fan interaction, what are the best ways, if any, for a fan to attempt to get their show on DVD? What should or shouldn't they do? Because over on the Shout message board, you guys have some pretty rabid fans over there.
Yeah, a little bit. but rabid is good, too. I mean, I was just having a conversation the other day where someone asked, "Hey, do you think, you know, how big is this fan base? You know, the vocal fans online don't really seem to be that big. Are they worth listening to, or should we just go ahead and do this thing the way that we want to do it?" And luckily, I wasn't having this conversation with anyone at Shout. I was having it with someone outside of Shout. And I made it very clear to them. I'm like, "Look, you don't even pay attention to the people. You know, you pay every bit of your attention to the people who are online. It could be three. Or if they're writing you letters, or if they're sending you voicemails or emails, only listen to the people who are devoted enough to contact you about it. Because if they're not into it enough to go talking about it online, or via email or via voicemail or letter, then they're people who would have bought it anyway. I really go after the people who want to say, because those are the ones who care about it enough to be vocal. Now you're absolutely right. There are people who can be downright mean. It is the internet. But at the same time, it's the internet. So, I can take that with a grain of salt. I can guarantee that a lot of the more negative things that have ever been said about me or about our company, the same person wouldn't necessarily say if they were coming up to me on the street. So, you just sort of take it however you want to, and you say, "Look, this was helpful," or "It wasn't." The interaction is the important part. Knowing that you're unhappy is one thing. Why are you unhappy? Okay, now I know. And I can take away all of the less than superlative nouns that you've called me, and I can break that down. But, you know, that person was eager to jump online and throw in their two cents, and I think that that's valuable. I think that everybody should be doing it. I mean, unfortunately, in this litigious age, studios can't really afford to go in there and talk to all the people they want to talk to. And I think that's unfortunate because it makes them closer to the fans. But at the same time, it's pretty time consuming.
Yeah. If you could produce a DVD set for any show that hasn't had one to this point, regardless of, you know, legal issues or this or that, if you could just pick any show that's ever been on to work on that doesn't have a set, what show would it be?
I wish I knew an answer for that. I say this because last year at Comic-Con in San Diego, I was on a panel for the Digital Bits. .com, and the same kind of question was asked, and unfortunately, right after or right before that panel, I had just finished up the last of the six shows I had come into Shout Factory with a wish on a wish list, and I had done all six of them, and so I don't know that I have one. Okay, all right. I will say this. There are shows that have had releases that I would like to go back and redo. And this is sort of a pipe dream, but going back and redoing Friday Night Lights would be a dream for me. Because the ones that were released by NBC, Universal, were A, cut episodes, and had music replacements for the last couple seasons, the ones that were on, Dish or whoever, who did that one? The Dish Network or someone. It was all, you know, they were basically syndicated cuts of a show that just aired 6 months ago. And I can't get behind that. I can't go spend the money.
Right.
Probably my OCD, but, I don't know that there's necessarily one that, I'm dying to work on. We are doing more movies now, and I would say that there are probably some movies that I would, you know, kill to work on. I can't think necessarily of them at the moment. Mr. Mom. I would love to work on a special edition of Mr. Mom. I can't lie. It's a childhood favorite. And to be in a room with Michael Keaton, that would be, you know, that'd be worth the price of admission for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, from Mr. Mom to Batman to Ken.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so it's like, I'm in. I will work on a Mr. Mom DVD. I gotta get that from MGM. We have to petition somebody for that. And that one, I don't even think that one. That's another one that I refuse to own because it's only in PanaScan. No widescreen transfers. I can't be bothered.
Can you give us any information on which sets you will be working on next? Any kind of spoilers on, like, for instance, G.I. Joe, the Deke series, or just anything in general?
I'll tell you, we are working on the Deke series.
Yes.
What I can't say is when. I can say that it's probably safe to say this late in the game that it won't be this year.
You would be my hero. You would be my hero if you could somehow track down a voice cast list of who voiced every character.
That would be awesome.
Oh, yeah, I mean, and it's one of those things where, let's see, and that was produced by Deke, so I'm sure Maurice LaMarche was in there somewhere.
Yeah, but for BehindTheVoiceActors.com, a site that I work on, it's been literally impossible to track down who voiced every character for us on the internet, so.
Really? You know what? I'll be more than happy to look up that information.
Excellent.
You know, we are going to work on it. It is going to be released. We don't have a date yet, and that's really only because we are so incredibly busy with a ton of stuff that's coming out, some of which has been reported and some of which hasn't. So there are things I can't say right now, but there are things that people are going to want, and unfortunately, as a result, I've had to put the Deke series on the back burner just because I want to be able to give every bit of attention to it that I possibly can, and I don't want to rush it out there. Right now I'm having a great deal of fun working on Gem and the Holograms.
Speaking of that,
yeah.
Really quickly, can you confirm or deny whether we'll actually get a complete series box set like Beast Wars, or will it just be seasons?
I cannot confirm or deny either of those.
Too early to say.
Yeah, I've been specifically told I am not allowed to say the configuration. This is actually for one reason in particular, and that's that the press release hasn't been, it has not been formally approved. So I am not allowed to divulge any of that information. I will say I have loved all 65 of these episodes that I've seen so far.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Anything else coming up besides Gem that you're allowed to say or not yet?
I'm hard at work right now on the Transformers Japanese collection, which for most fans, they all know them as the Takara series.
Right.
Headmasters, Super Godmaster Force, and Victory. Having a lot of fun working on that because it's not something that I got an opportunity to see as a kid. I was very much into anime as a kid in the 80s. But never got an opportunity to see, and now I'm getting a chance to see it, and it's pretty fantastic in its original Japanese with brand new subtitles. Yeah, that's turning into a lot of fun. And that one we're making available, I think that's July. Let's see, what else am I working on? For fans of like, I will actually come right out and say I was a huge fan of Greek on ABC Family, and I'm getting an opportunity to finish that box, you know, that series up with the fourth season.
Cool.
Which was something we weren't sure if we were going to be able to do, but we got the rights, and that's going to be coming out. Haven't started working on that yet, but can't wait. Yeah, there's just a lot of really good stuff, and some good movies that are coming out as well. A British movie that just hit the festival circuit last year. That's been announced as it's sort of From Dusk Till Dawn meets Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. it's a British gangster film where the seedy club owner suddenly finds himself going up against vampires called Dead Cert. And it's pretty awesome. So I'm having a lot of fun with that one as well.
Besides your full-time job, I understand you also like to write and direct your own short films. Do you have a favorite, and are there any you are currently working on?
You know, I just wrote a web series. I just wrote a 9-episode web series. I for whatever reason, I have suddenly found myself surrounded by people who are producing web series. And I sort of talked to them about it. I'm like, well, you know, what makes this something that you really want to do? And I find that the majority of them answer that they simply love television. And if they can't necessarily go into television right away, they want to start producing their own. And certainly by doing it as a short web series, it is making itself more widely available and you know, not necessarily easier because it still costs money. Filmmaking is a very expensive hobby. So, you know, you can raise a lot of money and do very little with it because it just doesn't stretch. But these web series are turning out to be really amazing. You know, there's one of my favorites is called Solo, about a guy who finds himself trapped in space on a reality TV show that's a one-man mission to Mars. And then after he's been launched into space, the show gets canceled due to low ratings. And now he's by himself. And no way back. And so it's great. It's a great series. Awkward Embraces is a really great web series. It's a comedy about geek girls. It's basically Sex and the City for geeks.
I've seen a few episodes of it. It's hilarious.
Yeah, like those girls are fantastic. And so I've just made friends with all these guys, and as a result, I sort of got talked into taking an idea of mine and turning it into a 9-episode series, and it basically it's my love letter to cosplay. So
nice.
I do love a good cosplay. I don't do it myself, but I have a huge amount of respect for anyone who does, and it's one of my favorite things to do when I go to Comic-Con. I will always go to Masquerade. So, but that kind of thing, you know, in terms of writing and directing, I can write anything from a romantic comedy to a horror film. Sometimes they're one and the same. You know, we also ghosts of girlfriends pass. yeah, I mean, I like everything. So.
Awesome. So is Twitter the best way for fans to stay connected with you? What are the best ways?
Yeah, that's a really easy way to stay connected with me. I'm at, at bward028 on Twitter. And then, to be perfectly honest, I'm there almost daily on the ShoutFactory.com forum. Just go to ShoutFactory.com and go to the community tab. We're about to change our website within the next couple of months, so that might change a little bit, but we're always going to make sure that we're actively communicating. So find me, and I respond to as many people as humanly possible.
Awesome. We'd like to thank Brian Ward for taking the time out to talk with us today. Brian, we'll ask you to hold the line, and we will be back after this.
I come from the net, through systems, peoples, and cities, to this place, Mainframe. My format, Guardian, to mend and defend.
Now on DVD, seasons 1 and 2 of the groundbreaking animated series, Reboot.
I'm back. Did you miss me?
All 23 episodes of this Saturday morning favorite in a 4-DVD set.
Whoa! Pixelacious!
Featuring an all-new audio commentary.
Perhaps this is not such a disaster after all.
Own the first fully computer-generated animated TV series.
Reboot!
Now on DVD.
Game over, user.
Well, well, look who's back.
Transformers Beast Wars Season 1. After the Great War, the Transformers story continues as the Maximals and Predacons battle in the distant past to determine the fate of the future.
Across the galaxy, it has come to this.
Let's do it!
All 26 episodes of the series that revolutionized the Transformers are here in this 15th anniversary 4-DVD set.
Megatron, terrorize! Optimus Primal, maximize!
If you're not with us, then you're against us!
This guy's got bearings of chrome steel.
Bonus features include all new interviews, original character models, and an art gallery. Transformers Beast Wars Season 1. Now on DVD.